The Senate will please come to order. Clerk, call the roll.
Atkinson, Atkinson, Bates, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Boquist, Burdick, Burdick, Carter, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Dingfelder, Farioli, Farioli, George, George, Girard, Girard, Hass, Hass, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Monas Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morissette, Morse, Morse, Nelson, Nelson, Krasanski, Rosenbaum, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Schrader, Starr, Starr, Telfer, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Walker, Whitsett, Whitsett, Winters, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here. So 75 is our first bill. Thank you.
Hey, Thomas. How you doing?
Civilized.
Good job, buddy. I've never seen anybody look as good as you did yesterday. It's as perfect a costume as I've ever seen. As perfect as I've ever seen. The colors, the cream colors, the buttons, everything.
Well, I think I shall purchase it. No, I've never had so many kids want their picture taken with me, though. Yeah, they don't know. They said I was the weird guy walking around at the time.
You doing the invocation, Frank? You doing? A quorum being present, we will post the colors, and Senator Schrader is going to lead us in the pledge.
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And today's invocation will be by our own Senator Frank Morris, please.
Saint Francis of Assisi was born in 1182 and died at the age of 42. He is remembered as one who lived eternal values and is remembered through this prayer. May his prayer be our prayer this day. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen.
Thank you, Senator Morris, for that invocation, prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. Thank you, Senator Schrader, for your leading us in the pledge, too. Appreciate that. We're under courtesies. I'll just announce, recognize Senator Bill Morissette, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I would like to introduce my intern, Alex Polston. Alex is a student at Portland State University. He's been very involved in a number of activities. He was a student senator in the ASPSU and even received an award for the Great Senator Award, the Best New Senator Award. So he's here in the Senate, you know, where he belongs. He's done a number of other things, including, first of all, he wants to go on to law school and become an environmental lawyer, and he will probably be working on the Klamath Dams, if he does, over the next 20 or so years. He worked for Intel as an intern, which is interesting because if you have any problems at all in disassembling your computer and putting it back together as it should be, well, Alex can do that. I think you can do that. Anyway, I'm very happy to have him, and please welcome him. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Morissette. Alex, thanks for being here. Hope we learn as much from you as you hopefully will learn from us. Thanks for helping Senator Morissette, too. Her internships are very valuable. Thank you. Further courtesies? Today at noon, there's a taco feed in the Galleria. My fellow senators, I hope you can go and participate because we're putting it on. The Senate staffs are putting it on to help raise money for the food drive. If you do not eat, you can make a contribution. So today at noon, taco feed in the building put on by the Senate staff working very hard to raise money for the governor's food drive. So I hope that everybody has a chance to go down there and either eat the food or at least make a $5 contribution. I think they're asking that. Thank you. Also, please remember there's something in colorful print on your desk. I'll talk about this over and over again beginning Monday, February 23rd. That's this coming Monday. Daily floor sessions this coming Monday here in the Senate. And we'll convene usually at 11 a.m. unless otherwise notified. So this coming Monday, we're going to start in daily floor sessions, usually at 11 o'clock unless we have another time designation. So I'll be talking about that over and over again. I'm also going to have other reminders of deadlines that are coming our way. Thank you, my fellow senators. Curtis, remonstrances, please. Recognize Senator Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, here we are 37 days into the legislative session, the 75th legislative session, and historic legislative session. And before us looms approximately $800 million to $1 billion hole. that we must fill within the next 4 months. That would be at the rate of more than $6 million a day, and the severity of that ratio gets worse every day. On top of the $800 million potential deficit for this biennium, and it could be greater, Mr. President, it looks like we're going to be upside down by a couple of billion in the next biennium. And just 2 years ago, we were looking at a $2 billion surplus in new revenue, money we did not anticipate. And 2 years ago, many of us in this chamber counseled that a billion of that should be put away for difficult times, for a rainy day. Had we taken our advice and put away $1 billion of that unanticipated revenue, we would have that money available today. We wouldn't have spent, we wouldn't have increased our spending by 20%. And there would be little need to cut or contemplate the cutting of programs. And Mr. President, it would be sensible for Oregon to develop a policy of savings in Oregon when surpluses are encountered, instead of spending every penny, which is what we did in the 2007 regular session. It would have been much better for us to put that money away or not spend at such a fearsome rate so that we could have avoided what looks like a looming catastrophe. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Are there further remonstrances? Messages from the House, reports from conference committees, reports from standing committees, and of course, the SR 8.551 committee report, summary number 15, which is distributed to members today. This information recorded the Journal State Report, so ordered. Reports from special committees, propositions and motions. What's the matter?
Go ahead and recognize Senator Bates.
Recognize Senator Bates, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that consideration of SCR 4 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and placed on the Monday, February 23rd calendar.
Senator Bates moved the consideration of SCR 4 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and placed on Monday's February 23rd calendar. Your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. This concerns the untimely and tragic death of Hank Collins and a memorial for him. His family can't be here today, and we'd like to move it till the 23rd when they can be here.
Thank you. Discussion? If there's no further discussion, the question is on taking SCR 4 from today's third reading calendar and placing it on Monday's February 23rd calendar. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. And all those opposed, no. This motion has carried.
Okay, now Verger.
Recognize Senator Joanne Verger, please.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 127 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and be moved to the February the 23rd calendar.
Senator Verger has moved that SB 127 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and placed on Monday's February 23rd calendar. Your motion, please.
We have not had a chance for everyone to discuss the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Discussion? Question is on taking SB 127 from its place on today's third reading calendar and placing it on Monday's February 23rd calendar. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. And those opposed, no. This motion has carried. Now I recognize Senator Bonamici, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that consideration of House Bill 2365 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and placed on the Monday, February 23rd calendar.
Senator Bonamici has moved that the consideration of HB 2365 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and placed on Monday's February 23rd calendar. To your motion, please, Senator Bonamici.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. This is a bill that involved a lot of work by a lot of stakeholders who are not able to be here tomorrow, today, but will be able to be here next week and would truly appreciate the consideration of participating in the debate. Thank you.
Thank you. It's discussion. The question is on taking HB 2365 from today's third reading calendar and placing it on Monday's February 23rd calendar. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. And those opposed, no. This motion has carried. Action on executive appointments that require the Senate confirmation. Introduction to the first reading of Senate measures.
Senate Bill 554, ruling to give an application to declare an emergency. Senate Bill 555, ruling school finance prescribing effective day. Senate Bill 556, ruling to automate external defibrillators. Senate Bill 557, ruling to placement of bitter lottery game bank terminals. Senate Bill 588, ruling to commercial transactions governed by the Uniform Commercial Code. Senate Bill 589, ruling to motion intervention in juvenile dependency proceedings. Senate Bill 560, ruling to dissolution of county service districts. Senate Bill 561, ruling to conflict of laws. Senate Bill 562, ruling to Oregon Law Commission declare an emergency. Senate Bill 563, ruling to interest due on late payments of property taxes. Senate Bill 564, ruling to nurses declare an emergency.
transmitted to the President's desk referral. The second reading of Senate measures, please.
Senate Bill 131, relating to the name of Board Regulating Naturopathic Medicine. Senate Bill 132, relating to Board of Naturopathic Examiners.
These are passed the calendar. The third reading of Senate measures. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 75, relating to disability, Governor.
Can I, Senator Metzger, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, during a recent emergency preparedness exercise, the governor pretended to have a disabling condition. This caused a review of the gubernatorial succession and disability statutes. It was found that under the current statute, there were logistical problems that could prevent a gubernatorial vacancy from being filled quickly during an emergency. For instance, if the governor's disability had been real, the determination of whether he was unfit would have been made by an ear, nose, and throat doctor who is the dean at OHSU and a psychiatrist who is the chief medical officer at the state hospital. After survey and other state succession statutes, SB 75A was drafted to do two things. First, to allow the governor to voluntarily transfer powers to an acting governor for a finite period of time if the governor knows he or she will be temporarily disabled, such as surgery. And secondly, to rework the process for determining whether the governor is disabled and unable to carry out the duties of the office. The bill does not change the constitutionally established order of succession, but it does provide flexibility to respond appropriately even during an emergency. The bill was unanimously supported in committee, has no fiscal impact out of your Senate Committee on Education and General Government. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Is discussion of the measure? Wish to close? Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 7-5. Those opinion bills passed, say aye's name called, those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Bonamici. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montez Anderson. Monroe. Morissette.
Yes.
Morse.
Please.
Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Walker. Whitsett. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Carter, Walker. 28 ayes.
The Senate Bill 75, having received constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 76, when climate through dams, declaring emergency.
Recognize Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. President. Distinguished colleagues, I bring Senate Bill 76, a bill to restore the Klamath River Basin and protect utility ratepayers, to the floor for your consideration and vote today. This bill has been thoroughly reviewed by the Environment and Natural Resources Committee with a specific look into three areas: the precise scope of Oregon's commitments in law through this bill, the public interest value of potential dam removal, and the short-term and long-term financial protection of Oregon's utility ratepayers and taxpayers. My overall view is that when such diverse interests come together to craft and support legislation, from farmers and ranchers to conservationists, from Pacific Corps to ratepayer groups, from the governor's office to the Klamath tribes, the results create balanced solutions for the environment, improvements for fishing and agricultural economies, and protection for ratepayers. The commitments in Senate Bill 76 are simple. Oregon, California, the federal government, and Pacific Corps recently reached a settlement over environmental issues associated with Pacific Corps' Klamath hydropower facilities. Settlement is a cost-saving alternative to lengthy litigation. It is essential to underscore that Senate Bill 76 does not mandate dam removal itself. The bill merely establishes the means for assuring that the ratepayer share of dam removal costs is handled in a manner that avoids a cost shock for the average ratepayer and caps the total ratepayer share of the cost at a fixed amount. Senate Bill 76 has no fiscal impact to the state. This bill directs the Public Utility Commission, the PUC, through its expert process of prudence and rate fairness review, to authorize and manage a trust fund that gradually collects up to $180 million from Oregon ratepayers and contributes these funds to dam removal when further studies confirm that dam removal is viable. This bill essentially sets a cap on how much Oregon ratepayers will contribute to dam removal, about $18 per year from now to 2020 for the average ratepayer. California ratepayers are expected to contribute $20 million to the fund, and the state of California is committing an additional $250 million general obligation bonds to ensure that California pays its fair share and to ensure that there is more than enough money for removal of all four hydropower dams. The bill also allows PacifiCorp to recover its remaining investment in the hydropower project over the next 10 years, costs our PUC has already found to be prudent, and to recover the cost of the small amount of power to be replaced by the dams, with Oregon only paying its allocated share, which is about 25% of. This is the formula set between its six state rate base. All of this will be done under PUC supervision and control to ensure that any funds collected or spent are prudent and fair, just, and reasonable. The public interest value of dam removal is clear. Every major federal and state agency involved in Klamath River management has advocated for dam removal as a key to restoring the basin's fisheries and addressing water quality problems. The dams create only a small amount of electricity, less than about 90 megawatts of dependable capacity. This is about 1% of PacifiCorp's generation. They provide no irrigation and minimal flood control benefits and are not used for transportation. Dam removal is essential to restore the third largest salmon runs on the West Coast. But dam removal is also the key for wider benefits in a recently achieved and far-reaching agreement. Colleagues, since 2005, farmers and ranchers, fishing interests, Klamath River tribes, conservation groups, federal and state agencies have worked on an action plan, the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, to restore fisheries and stabilize rural economies and communities in the Klamath Basin. The four cornerstones of this historic agreement are such: a commitment to recovery of native fish populations, a commitment to provide reliable quantities of irrigation water to the Upper Basin's farmers and ranchers, a commitment to settle disputed water rights, and a commitment to removal of the four Klamath River hydropower dams. That's why the Klamath Water Users Association supports this bill. Senate Bill 76 assures short- and long-term financial protection for PacifiCorp's ratepayers. This bill and the dam removal settlement will save money for Oregon ratepayers compared to the mandatory environmental measurements that Oregon ratepayers would also be asked to cover if PacifiCorp completed a relicensing process. Under this bill, Oregon ratepayers' maximum contribution of $180 million would be about the same as the absolute minimum they would pay under relicensing. Without Senate Bill 76, ratepayers would carry costs of mandated fish ladders, PacifiCorp's litigation costs, and very expensive and yet undefined measures to address water quality issues, again with no cap and no to total contributions. That's why groups like the Oregon Business Association support this bill. It saves industrial, business, and residential customers money in the short and long run. The bill also preserves and protects the role of the PUC and its expert analysis. The PUC will supervise all rate collection and allocation of ratepayer monies to dam removal and associated costs. The bill was amended in my committee to preserve this process, ensuring that even the question of cost-benefit of settlement versus relicensing will get full and open treatment under the PUC process. That's why Senate Bill 76 has the firm support of the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, which represents the concerns of PacifiCorp's customers in the state. Under the agreement in principle for settlement that backs this bill, the U.S. Secretary of Interior will undertake further cost and environmental studies before deciding on dam removal. Oregon can then review this analysis and exit from dam removal and allocation of trust funds if we have concerns. As to further financial liabilities to ratepayers, Senate Bill 76 is definitive in Section 4, Subsection 3, that monies collected may not exceed the amount necessary to fund Oregon's share of the $200 million identified in the agreement in principle for dam removal. The state of Oregon and its taxpayers are not responsible for dam removal. Only the removal of the J.C. Boyle Dam in Oregon would require state permits, and this provides another layer of protection against unknowns. It is the federal government that will oversee the final major action of dam removal. That's why attorneys of the Oregon Department of Justice have testified that they see no statutory, common law, or other legal basis for state liability on cost overruns or other liabilities for eventual dam removal. In development of this bill, we have seen uncommonly broad support that includes farmers, fishermen, tribes, conservation interests, governments, and the utility itself, PacifiCorp. As those diverse interests move forward on a final dam removal agreement, on other basin restoration initiatives, on recovery of native fish runs to abundance, and even success in the Klamath Basin, I ask for your vote because this will lay the foundation for that success. Moreover, your vote today will protect Oregon ratepayers in a way that assures they pay only their fair share of the costs and no more. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 76.
Thank you, Senator Dingfelder. We're now in a discussion. Recognize Senator Bates, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm not going to add much more that the good chair of this committee has not added already, but I want to just emphasize a couple of things. We have a group called we commonly call ourselves the Rural Caucus that meets every Tuesday morning, and this has been a major consideration and discussion, both Republicans and Democrats there talking this issue over. We do not come to a consensus in that. We don't try to. It's an opportunity to discuss and learn from each other. The key issues that were there for us were, number one, liability to Oregon taxpayers. We have been assured, and I believe it's correct, that there is no liability to Oregon taxpayers in this bill. The second issue is one she's hit on very well also, is there a liability potentially to ratepayers. It's a pretty simple, straightforward business decision here. Pacific Corporation has decided that if they have to go through the FERC process of licensing these facilities, which are outdated and would require significant investments on their part, that would cost them more than it would to remove the dams. If there are other costs involved in this at a later time, this cap is in place to prevent that from being passed on to ratepayers. In addition, any other change of rates being charged would have to go through the PUC. At that point, Pacific Corp would say, this is too expensive, we're going back and we're going to keep the dams in, we're going to go on through the FERC process and get licensed. These issues are going to be fleshed out as we go through this process over the next 5, 6, 7, or 8 years. We must not derail this and stop this at this time. There's another issue here, too, I think that's important, and that goes to the process of how we function in this building, and it may be, for the rest of our session, even more important. And, Mr. President, I'd like to speak to it if you'd allow me to.
Please do.
We have a system of committees, and when a bill is going through a committee, you have an opportunity to offer amendments at that time. It is the responsibility of those people who are trying to offer those amendments to offer them in a timely fashion and to take them directly to the chair of that committee and discuss it with the chair of that committee. I believe in this particular process there was a miscommunication and a failure for this to happen. Had that not occurred, I think we would have had a much clearer picture of this bill. As a chair of a committee myself, I don't want to find out that there's amendments somewhere in the building that I have not seen and have not been brought to me at the last moment. And I believe that happened in this issue. I'm asking that for members and lobbyists and people who are in this process, that we have clear lines of communication, that we communicate with each other in open and honorable fashion, and that we do it in a timely fashion, not after a bill has left committee. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Bates. Recognize Senator Boquist, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I voted no in the committee. I think it was very clear in the committee hearing process why I voted no. I didn't even get to the point of let's take the dams out. I simply got hung up on the liability issue. The previous good senator spoke, and I'm not convinced there is no liability issue, needless to say. Having said that, it is very true that the proponents have said that there is no liability to the state of Oregon. The proponents in this are the state of Oregon. The state of Oregon is a signature on a document. The document that they're a signature on caps doesn't cap the liability. It outlines what they believe the top cost will be, which is about $450 million. And then it says Oregon is not going to pay any more than the $450 million. This is an illegal document that the AG has to defend. That same document and same line also says the United States government that they signed that their Solicitor General is not going to pay any more money either. And then it goes on, California, whose AG's office signed on to this thing, isn't going to pay any more money either. And we go right on down the line to Pacific Corp and Pacific Corp customers, so on and so forth like that. The fact of the matter is under contract law, when you sign a document that everybody involved said none of us are liable, in the end, somebody's going to be liable. Okay, just the way it goes. So that raised my concern. The next concern is we are facing in the state of Oregon a budgetary crisis, which we all talk about almost on a daily basis, and we as a body, 30 members, Democrats and Republicans, urban and rural, it's a huge challenge, but it's not insurmountable. Just to the south of us, and to maybe some of the good senators, you know, south of where the state of Jefferson ought to be, to the south of them is the state of California, which is the eighth largest economy in the world. And I think as of today, they're up. When I say they're up, the state of California is bankrupt and $47 billion in the hole. So when you're sitting in a committee hearing everything that's maybe a good idea or may not be a good idea, and you're going on the good word of the state of California, who is now laying off people and sending IOUs out, which aren't worth the paper they're written on, but maybe hopefully they're coming from Oregon paper mills, you don't have a clue whether or not they're going to be able to sell their bonds, which are unrated right now, and they fulfill their end of this obligation. So to me, as I looked across it, despite all of the issues out there, we have the silt built up, there's the pre-costs that aren't covered, there's the post-costs for environmental that are unknown, so to speak, and then it really comes down, and the AG was very straightforward and said, yes, today, we're going to allow the PUC to cap the ratepayers, and if you change your mind 2 years from now, you can come back and remove that cap. So it really is not a cap per se. It's a cap today that all of us will probably revisit in a few years down the line. But to me, it was just the obstacle of there's too much liability here and too much undefined. And in my mind, we could have waited until June towards the end of session and had a better grasp of what those liabilities were. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Boquist. Recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the measure.
To the measure.
I referenced this in my last four speeches, particular bill. It's kind of a here we go again. It's well-known fact that there are those in the administration and some in this august body that are for dam removal at any cost. We know that. But let's set that aside for a minute. The issue of salmon was brought up here, which is kind of a smokescreen. It truly is, if you look historically at the fish runs in that river. But the real issue for me, Mr. President, is the fact that FERC has put on the table a potential cost of this of $4 billion. And the majority of that is in silt removal. Okay? And that will probably end up being a pre-dam removal requirement. And I don't see anywhere in the bill where we are protected from liability for those costs. We have asked these questions, and we were waiting for a response. And we thought, based on our conversation in the Rural Caucus this morning, that there was enough concerns over the unmentioned liability in this that it might be worth sending back to committee to take a look to make sure that we had some level of certainty. Clearly, that is not happening today. This is another measure, Mr. President, which we are rushing to without all of the data we need to make a good and legitimate decision. We keep doing this over and over and over again. I'm hoping at some point in time we have the ability to put some true deliberation into this. And I also know that there was some documentation that was critical to inform this process that didn't even show up in committee and was actually spirited into this building from California who had it. And somehow we didn't. So that brings the whole process into question as well. This is a issue that has been brought before us totally prematurely. I would prefer it go back to committee, but I guess my only option at this point in time is to vote no.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Recognize Senator Chris Telfer, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill.
I represent District 27, and that is a district who receives the energy to turn the lights on in their homes from these dams through Pacific Corp. And I commend the state and Pacific Corp for an attempt to come together and try to come to an agreement whereby the ratepayers are considered and tried to be protected. I am concerned, though, that in my inquiries as to defining what the cost of removal of the dam, that is being capped at $200 million, protecting the ratepayers. But when I inquire as to the subsequent environmental cleanup costs, whether those are capped, I'm not getting an answer. I also know that in the bill, the pre-decommissioning expenses are not capped. And I'm concerned that the silt behind the dam, which may in fact be hazardous, would have to be removed prior to decommissioning the dam, taking the dam down. Therefore, those would not be capped. I'm also very concerned that Dash 6 amendments were not considered and incorporated into the bill. I need to protect the ratepayers in my district. This bill does not protect the ratepayers to the degree I would like, and in addition, when I thought we had some amendments that might clarify some of these unknowns, those were not incorporated into the bill. So I would encourage you all to help protect the ratepayers in District 27 and vote no on this bill.
Thank you, Senator Telfer. Recognize Senator Larry George.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill?
To the bill, please.
I just got a couple of simple comments, which is we work really hard in this building to try to develop green energy. These are hydro plants. And I couldn't miss the irony that in the agreement that I got a copy of, agreement in principle, they talk about the fact that we are basing this plan off of waiving a series of federal laws. It's contingent on the fact that the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, and then there's a clause that says any similar Oregon or California statutes or regulations. We're going to put all of these environmental regulations on hold so we can take out green energy. So a vote for this bill, as I read this, is that you're going to vote for a bill to suspend the Clean Water Act, you're voting for a bill to suspend the Endangered Species Act, and any other regulation or environmental statute to take out green energy facilities. In addition, then, with what seems to be a great deal of confusion of exactly what the burden that the citizens of the state of Oregon will pay. And this seems like an incredibly risky proposal at this time. I just am kind of caught off guard by the fact that while we talk about all the green things we want to do, we're going to do this to set these bills aside in this piece of legislation. It's all dependent on whether the federal legislation sets major environmental policy aside to blow these dams. And to me, it's quite confusing. And more importantly is, I think it's really unfortunate that at a time when we're trying to develop new, renewable, clean energy sources, that the first thing we do is go after the cleanest, most renewable energy that the Pacific Northwest has, which is hydro. Anyway, I urge a no vote. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator George. Recognize Senator Frank Morris, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the carrier yield to a question?
Would the carrier yield? She will.
Thank you. Great deal of discussion about what the definition of dam removal costs means. And my question would be, does that include the issue of sediment, its removal, and the potential consequences of that removal?
Thank you, Senator, for that question. Dam removal is not defined in the bill, as you can see under the definition section, but we did have discussion about liability in the committee, as I've already mentioned. And let me just clarify a few things in regards to that. First of all, we did ask the Department of Justice, I don't know what the Attorney General discussed this morning, obviously, because I wasn't in the meeting that people referenced, but we specifically asked, and I have in writing here a letter from the Department of Justice about whether the state risks other liabilities associated with dam removal. And we also asked whether the state risks liability for dam removal cost overruns. First of all, there's a provision in the agreement in principle that addresses the scenario of dam removal costs exceeding $450 million. First, there is a U.S. determination whether benefits of dam removal outweigh costs and risks. This determination is based on further science and engineering studies, and they have to be published by March 31st, 2012. At the time of the determination, the states of Oregon and California may withdraw from the final agreement based on liability or cost concerns. So that's an off-ramp if those issues come up. Second, the agreement in principle provision is that the United States and the two states will meet and confer if removal costs are likely to exceed $450 million. This provision does not commit any party to finance cost overruns, could result in a new agreement for addressing costs and proceeding with dam removal. And then also, resolution of the issue of cost overruns will partly depend on the outcome of continued negotiations. Federal legislation has to pass, and if we don't have federal legislation that passes, once again, we have an off-ramp of 2012 to withdraw. So as far as nothing that I can see in Senate Bill 76 from our discussions would impose liability on the state for such claims above the $180 million cost cap.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Recognize Senator Whitsitt, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, as you know, I'm from the Klamath Basin. I've lived there for 40 years. At least three-fourths of the constituents from the Klamath Basin who have contacted me, and there's been several hundred, are strongly opposed to dam removal. Strongly opposed. The Siskiyou County Commission has voted unanimously to oppose dam removal. And, of course, three of the four dams are in Siskiyou County. Many of the people that live along the river, above the dams, alongside the dams, and below the dams, have contacted our office and begged us to oppose removing the dams from the Klamath River. So to characterize this bill as being widely accepted and widely considered appropriate, I don't believe is an appropriate characterization. The Klamath County Natural Resources Advisory Committee, that committee of natural resources-based people who advised the county commission in Klamath County, it voted unanimously to oppose dam removal. Even the Klamath water users have dozens of members who have contacted our office by telephone, by email, and in person, asking us to oppose dam removal on the Klamath River. Pacific Corps tells us this bill is not about dam removal. It's about setting rates and about liability. And I agree, it certainly is about rates and liability. We've indicated that there was some concern about salmon and the reintroduction of salmon into the upper basin, and somehow this is going to fix the Klamath River. Folks, there's very little evidence that there were ever salmon in the upper basin. If you look at the basin and range geology up there, the waters are too warm for 9 months out of the year for salmon to survive up there. As a matter of fact, do you believe that the short-nosed sucker and the Lost River Sucker would be considered holy fish by the Klamath tribes and revered for their food source, had the tribes had a choice between salmon and suckerfish? Both the agreement in principle and Senate Bill 76 purport to absolve Pacific Corps, Oregon, California, and the United States from all liability for dam removal. Moreover, the agreement in principle and Senate Bill 76 are silent on assignment of liability for environmental or other unintended consequences to any other entity except for the federal dam removal entity. These liabilities include the disposition of more than 9,000 acre-feet of sediment sequestered behind the four dams. 9,000 acre-feet, folks. To put that in perspective, it's about 14 square miles a foot deep in mud. It's 1,500,000 10-yard dump trucks full of slimy muck. So are we going to leave it in the river, or are we going to take it out of the river? If we leave it in the river, it would seem to me that the environmental hazard would be amazing, since we don't know what kind of toxic may be in that sediment. The studies so far have been totally inadequate. We simply don't know what's in there. Even if it isn't toxic, this fine colloidal volcanic sediment will choke the river for years to come. And there's no way that that sediment can stay in the river. Because, folks, if you've been in the Klamath River Canyon, this is a steep canyon. It's a whitewater rafting canyon. The reason the dams are there is because that's where the fall in the river is to generate the electricity. So if you run in a storm event, if you've seen the Klamath River Canyon, I mean, it's a torrent running through there. This fine colloidal sediment, there's no way it's going to stay on the banks. It's going to cave off. It's going to landslide off. It is going to fill this river with sediment for years to come. Liability, the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen and the Sierra Club and who knows any group of other environmental groups have sued the North Coast DEQ, the California area, for violating the total maximum daily load on the Klamath River. That suit came in last Wednesday. They're concerned about the amount of sediment that's going in the river now from disturbing an acre or two or from a road or something like that. What do you think the response is going to be when they dump 1,500,000 dump trucks load of slimy muck down the river? Where does all that potential liability go? After 3 hours of bipartisan conversation and debate in our rural caucus, that issue has not been resolved. It has not even been adequately explained or quantified. Even this august body of legislators cannot make potentially $4 to $5 billion of liability just simply disappear into thin air. It's just not possible. The agreement in principle assigned the liability to the dam removal entity. What sane corporation would assume more than $5 billion in unquantified and uncapped liability? Think about that. Where does the liability go? I must logically assume, under the current language of Senate Bill 76, that their liability must be assigned to Pacific Corps ratepayers to be collected by adjusting future surcharge amounts as necessary to offset these potential costs. And that is actually provided for in the Dash 5 amendments. Sections 2 and 3 and 4 talk about dam removal. Later in the bill, you'll find the escape route where Pacific Corps may add other assigned costs to the ratepayers. I'm very, very concerned that some of those assigned costs will be this huge, unquantified, and unassigned liability. The cost of replacement of the power generation and the unique peaking function hasn't even been addressed here today. That's that gift that's going to go on for generations to come. Mr. President, there's too many unanswered questions here. The industrial customers of the Northwest Utilities oppose 76. If you look at the letter on your desk, these include Air Liquids, Air Products, Amcor, CertainTeed Gypsum, Blue Heron, Boeing, Boise Cascade, Boise Paper, Dyno Noble, ConAgra, Echo Chemicals, Emerald Performance, Equichlor, Evanti Fiber, Araz, Frary's Lumber, Georgia Pacific, Grays Harbor Paper, Hewlett Packard, Inland Empire Paper, Intel, International Paper, J.R. Simplot, Kimberly Clark, Linde, Longview Fiber. You can read the list. It's a who's who among the industries in the state of Oregon, in the Northwest. With our economy in free fall, this is no time to cripple these industries, folks. I urge a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. It's recognized. Sir, and Senator Girard yielded his time. Thank you. Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson, please.
Let me begin, Mr. President, by being safe, declaring a potential conflict of interest. My company consults in the area of renewable energy and utilities. Pacific Core is a client in 07 and 08, and I am a fourth-generation landowner on the Klamath River.
Your potential conflict is noted for the record. Please proceed.
I agree heartily with my friend from Klamath Falls that this bill is not widely accepted. In fact, it's not widely accepted at all. Very rarely do you have a time in American politics or in your time in politics where you stand alone. And the only thing you stand on is your principle and your conviction and your commitment to doing what you believe is right. And Mr. President, that is exactly where I find myself on this bill. It's got nothing to do with anything other than the fact that this is not a political issue for me. This is an issue I have grown up with. Just this morning, I received an email from a high school friend of mine who told me if I voted yes on this bill, he would never speak to me again. When we heard testimony on this bill, I drew a map of the river system, and I sat next to Senator Hass, and I spoke to him and pointed out every person who spoke for this bill or opposed this bill. I knew them. I could draw a map to exactly where they are. I could drive you to their home. I know both sides of this. Mr. President, I will lose friends over this bill. The last campaign I was in, I had two county chairs in eastern Oregon who both opposed this bill. My friends in Klamath County oppose this bill. I have a few friends left in Klamath County that are for this bill, but for the most part, I am alone. Now, why in the world would I stand alone? The easiest thing to do is to dream up the talking points from the 1990s, compare these private dams to federal dams, and to say that no. It's easy. That's the easy vote. It's painfully easy. We all know those talking points. But let me just tell you why this is good. This is good because I believe with all my heart this protects the ratepayers. We have never, ever seen a government program that costs less as time marches on. We are talking today in $09, realizing that nothing on this bill is going to happen far into the future. Costs will exceed this bill. Mr. President, there is no status quo. There is no status quo on the Klamath River. These private dams are up for federal relicensure. There are two ways that you can go on this. You can do the cost of relicensure and put that cost onto the ratepayers with absolutely no certainty, or you can fight relicensure and have the same thing and the same fights go on for the next 20 years. That has been the precedent in American history. The longest relicensure, I believe, was in the state of Washington that lasted 21 years. The executives just said, put it off on the ratepayers, and they retired. That is an option. Here's what we do know under that option. We know that under that option, that irrigators will get less water. We do know under that option that rates will go up. We know that under that option that federal clean water acts will have to be complied with in order to get the relicensure, and costs will go up. Here's what this body does not have the ability to do. This body does not have the ability to change the agreement. We only have the ability to protect the ratepayers. That's the only chance we have. The status quo is dead. This is the only opportunity you have. You either cap it in '09 dollars, realizing that it's going to cost something else in 2016, 2018, or we just go down the federal relicensure road with absolutely no certainty of the ratepayers. This morning, I sat with my son. We had waffles. And I asked him, I said, what do I do? What's a vote? And my son said, well, that's where you decide things. I said, thank you. I said, I've conditioned him. He's the fifth generation on that river. And I've said to him, I said, what is the Klamath River? And my son's response, as it has been since he was 3 years old, is he's supposed to say, it's our river. That is the response. That's how I was raised. That's how my father was raised. That's how my grandfather was raised. That is the family response. So I told my son, I said, son, list off all the names of your friends. He said, in Salem? I said, list them all off. So he did. He listed off his cousins, and he listed off his friends across the street at kindergarten, and he left it off his friends. And I said, if all your friends were voting no and you had to vote yes for your river, what would you vote? This is a tough spot if you're six. He says, well, Dad, I suppose I'd vote yes. I said, why? He says, because it's our river. It's true. There's a lot of things about this that are unsaid. Something that you didn't realize that's in the agreement is that the Pacific Power Company no longer operates the dams, or is no longer going to operate the dams that actually irrigate land. All of these dams that we're talking about are below the diversions for farmers. One thing that you're not going to realize that is in this agreement is that the Keno Dam is no longer controlled by PacifiCorp, but goes back to its rightful owner, which is the Bureau of Reclamation. One thing that you're not going to read about in this, in Senate Bill 76, that is very important to know, that you are enabling the absolute best screening project in world history to go on for fish. Whether you like that or not, that's what's going to happen. Whether you know it or not in this bill is absolute certainty for farmers, and whether you know it or not, there's absolute certainty for ratepayers in the next 20 years. Sediment's an interesting issue. Sediment's been said by a lot of folks who don't, with all due respect, have never been there. If you would, you'd know that in 1962, the Iron Gate Dam was put in. It was the lowest dam. And below the Iron Gate Dam is the longest wild and scenic river in Northern California, in all of California. It's one of the longest wild and scenic rivers in America, actually. The other thing you'll notice is, well, we put it in for power. Well, the bottom three dams actually don't generate much power. The only one that does generate power is the one that's in Oregon. The bottom three really don't do anything. And they were put in for diversion and flood control in 1962 because in the 1930s, steelhead became a game fish. And they used to kill fishermen by making power. The river would rise that fast. So they put in another, essentially, circuit breaker dam called Iron Gate. In those days, my grandfather would ride on the hood in the fenders of an old Packard, and he would go down the river, and if he saw foam break off, he would warn men that the river was coming up and to get out of the river, because they only had hip boots at the time. But they probably didn't read about that. Here's what you did. Here's one thing about sediment you should know, is that behind Iron Gate, There's Iron Gate Lake, and in August, you can't water ski in it, you can't swim in it, because it's a health hazard. It's green. It bakes everything that's in it. Oregon State University did a study that showed that between Iron Gate Dam and Scott River, California, that's where most of the fish fry bake. Our family's kept a record of the river since the 1920s. We know what fly, we know what temperature, what air temperature, what river temperature, what fly worked, who came to dinner, who told lies. It's something we've done all the way back to the 20s. And we can see, at least in our, you can say that I'm crazy and that it's not necessarily scientific, but we can show a noticeable change in the river from the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and after the 60s, it changed dramatically. It's a public health hazard. It's also in another state. Let me tell you something interesting, another part about this bill you might not know. There's a lot of partisan hatred for the last presidential administration. A lot of people that absolutely hate George W. Bush. When the water crisis came in, the President of the United States made a commitment to the basin. He said, I don't know how to fix this. Every time our congressional delegation on both sides of the aisle would talk to him, he'd say, what about the Klamath? What about the Klamath? What about the Klamath? As his term was coming to a conclusion, and he was being vilified, it was put to me that there's only so many airplanes that are going to land on that aircraft carrier before that term's out. There's a lot of things that were flying around. There's only so many things that are going to happen. President of the United States told the Interior Secretary, who was a former governor of our neighbor in Idaho, to cut a deal. And inside that was two key provisions. The first key provision was to protect ratepayers and farmers. And the next key provision was to protect the basin from another 20 years of litigation. Now, you may not like that. I just might have lost some votes on one side of the aisle over that. But that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. The Clinton administration in the final days made a similar act that you might not know about. In the final days of the Clinton administration, under the direction of Secretary of the Interior Bruce Babbitt, they said that they were going to change the water allotment on the Trinity River. Trinity River right now is the major river that goes into the Klamath, far below all of the projects that we're talking about today. 80% of the Trinity River is diverted. All of you remember seeing in the Oregonian and all newspapers about all the fish that died, which you didn't read about. When all those editorials were so quick to blame farmers, what you didn't read about is those fish weren't even Klamath fish. Those were fish that were headed up the Trinity. Little truth in advertising there. Something was left out. But under the executive order of the Clinton administration, it got tied up in court by Weston Irrigation Company. If you don't think that this is hardball politics, talk to my good friend Senator George and let him tell you his family history with Weston Irrigation Company. The President of the United States did not want to have the exact same mistake that his predecessor made in trying to settle a deal. Let me wrap up. I've had so much to talk to you about on this bill, but I'm reminded of my favorite character in the Old Testament. He was somebody who people didn't know what to make of him. He didn't have the right education. He was a cupbearer to the king. And he had this thing on his heart, and he had this thing that part of his family that bothered him. And it bothered him so much that he went before the king and he couldn't smile. When you're before the king, you're supposed to smile or you could be killed. And he refused. He wasn't happy. He tried to put on a happy face, but he couldn't fake it very well. So the king said, what troubles you? He told him what troubled him. And he went on to do things that Everybody laughed at. His own people laughed at him. They said, this is crazy. It'll never happen. There's too much liability. And he did what very few leaders did, is he actually got his hands dirty, and he actually picked up rocks, and he actually did it. And in that, if you read that story, there's two bad characters that followed him around, named Sanballat and Tobiah. And these men came around and heckled him, told him how wrong it was, told him they were going to destroy him politically. And they cast out open letters. I don't know if you know what that means, but that's essentially taking out a bad editorial against somebody in those days. They spread bad letters about him. But he didn't. The lesson of leadership there is he didn't respond. And over time, there was great healing, and the wall was built, and there was a complete change of heart. Mr. President, I sat with my grandfather the day that the doctor came in and told him that he wasn't going to live anymore. And you know what he told me? He said, take me downriver. 2 years later, my grandmother did the exact same thing. Mr. President, I'm voting for this bill not because of any Sanballat or Tobiah, not because of any ICNU, not because I know everybody on both sides of this, not because for 38 years I've lived and breathed every ounce of this thing, not because I understand fish and I understand farmers, not because I understand how the deal was put together, not because I understand, none of that's important. Last summer I almost died, and I sat there and I thought, what do I like about politics? You know, it was much easier to tell you what I don't like. That list is pretty long. And I sat there and I remembered an old colleague of ours, Senator Ringo. Senator Ringo and I had a missed opportunity. We should have passed toxic mixing zones. We should have done that. If I go off this floor right now and my inbox is full and people are going to recall me or do whatever they're going to do, is it still the right vote? It is. This vote won't even matter tomorrow. But 20 years from now, it'll matter a lot. We're protecting people. We've protected farmers. There is no status quo. The brave thing to do is to move this forward.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. I reckon Senator Morissette, Senator Devlin, and Senator Burdick all yielded their time. Recognize Senator Joanne Verger, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. The senator from Southern Oregon has given a very moving commentary. He obviously loves that river. He knows a lot of the history, and I appreciate what he has said about this bill. His position and my position are a little different. He's having to go against friends who are going to be mad with him because he's convinced that he's going to vote in a way that he's going to vote his conscience. Well, I'm in a position where I vote with my district, and my district, the fishermen and many of the citizens, strongly support this bill. And so when I vote to support this bill, I'm going to get emails thanking me for my vote. What worries me about today is that I've had a lot of concerns about the liability, about the sediment, even the precedent that this bill might set. And I've not been alone. There have been people on both sides of the aisle that have had these concerns. Today, as I listened to both sides in a caucus that was held early this morning, I realized that they weren't that far apart, that there was a possibility of an agreement, and that it might even be very close. And I was hoping that that could take place before people were asked to vote. so that it would ease the fears. So what I would like to say this morning is that I hope we don't have a lot of this where we are so close to all of us agreeing that we can be comfortable about a bill, and so that we can do good bipartisan work in the legislature. I'm disappointed that that decision was made to move forward for a vote today, and I will vote for my district, but I could not let the vote go by without saying that the concerns of my friends on the Republican side, my colleagues here on the Democratic side, I want us to be comfortable, and sometimes that requires a day or two more of discussion. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Verger. I recognize Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues. First of all, I want to thank the chair of the committee. I know this is a very, very difficult issue, and it's emotional in many cases, but it has also long-term implications, and those are very, very difficult issues. I really appreciate the great oratory of the senior senator from Southern Oregon, very heartfelt, and I could not find in that discussion that he presented to us a single thing I would disagree with. Absolutely everything I would agree with. But I want to get to a couple of issues that I think are really critical. This is not about fish. It is not about agriculture or irrigation or the environment, not Senate Bill 76. It's part of that overall discussion. Senate Bill 76 is about utility law. It's about ratepayers. It's about how we effect the policy decision. Now, I will tell you, I'm in the opposite position of the great senior senator from Southern Oregon in terms of, you know, my mail and the people who want me to support Senate Bill 76. You know, I was really privileged last year to be named to the Northwest Steelheaders Hall of Fame. And only a few public officials have done that. Tom McCall, John Kitzhaber. That was a real honor because that's very important to me. Fish, our environment, and making it work. But I've also spent 10 years in this legislature working on utility law and making sure that ratepayers are protected. As the good senator just spoke, this bill is this close to really protecting ratepayers. And we have advocates and we have the opponents agreeing that they can reach an agreement on that. And it is disheartening as early as this morning to say we can do this and yet we do not take the moment to ensure these protections. Our own legislative council has said, and said in our rural caucus, that these costs only relate to dam removal. They do not limit the they do not relate to the liabilities that may be caused by dam removal. It is incumbent on us to protect our ratepayers because the testimony in committee was broad enough to say, yes, our intent is that this is our cap of the $200 million estimated to be $180 that would cover all those caps. But we understand very clearly the letter of the bill does not cover those liabilities. And yet both sides are saying they're willing to put that language in to make it sure that 10 years from now, none of us are reading in the newspaper that there is a huge tariff being put on the citizens of Oregon, hundreds of thousands of rate-paying customers, because we didn't take the time to put that language in the bill, language that both the opponents and the proponents have agreed that they would do. So now we're sailing not the silt down the river, but the bill down the river, and I have very little confidence that's going to happen. So that's where I come from. I want to make sure the ratepayers are protected. We have within our grasp, perhaps minutes or hours, the ability to force that compromise and to protect the ratepayers. And then this bill goes through 25 or 26 votes probably and sails through, because this bill is important. As the great Southern senator from Oregon said, this is an important piece of legislation. I want to support this piece of legislation, but I want to support the ratepayers. I don't want to have our own legislative council and the people who are involved in this bill clearly articulate that it does not cover these unknown liabilities that could result from the dam removal. And I think it is incumbent upon us to do that. That is the clear intent of the legislation that was brought forward. And yet, for some reason, we can't seem to put those few words in the letter of this bill. And as we have all known who have served in this body for a long time, when it gets to a court decision, the court always says it's the plain language of the bill. Don't tell me about the testimony. I don't need to see the floor session. It's the plain language of the bill. I am very disappointed that I have to vote no today, because this is so easy to vote yes with a few extra words to protect the ratepayers of Oregon. It is not in the bill, and I will have to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Recognize Senator Nelson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to come at this bill just a little bit differently, I guess. I'd have to admit to several character flaws, probably brought upon the fact that I used to carry around canvas dams with an 8-foot 2x4. So I have a little bit different view of the world, I think, as far as water is concerned. The thing I don't like about this bill is the inconsistency of what our policy is on a broad basis. The big issue that we have, as I understand, as a society, is climate change, global warming. During the interim, there was a series of roundtables that went throughout the state. One of the top four things that came out of that roundtable, talking to individuals who are knowledgeable about water, very serious about water, was the fact that we need more water storage, not less. So I think on a big issue that we're talking about here, talking about dam removal doesn't come close to appreciating the adaptations that we're going to have to make in our changing climate and environment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thanks, Senator Nelson. Further discussion? Senator Dinkfeld, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. President. And I want to thank my colleagues for the robust discussion that we've had here on the floor today. I will tell you that it is a little bit disappointing, as chair of a committee, that some of the process that occurred with this bill. I think there's some people that are very familiar with how committees work, and frankly, we had a really, I'd say, thorough discussion in the committee. We did have some unfortunate incidences where some people came forward not through the committee process, which does not help for people on the committee not to hear what the concerns are. All of the concerns that were raised here today were addressed in our committee in one form or another. I am just going to read, because I would like to reiterate, although I mentioned it in my opening statement, dated February 13, 2009, letter from the Department of Justice, the General Counsel Division. And I quote, your committee asked whether Oregon customers of PacifiCorp risk being responsible for dam removal costs exceeding the approximately $180 million that would be collected from them under Senate Bill 76. Our view is that the risk is low. First, the bill expressly states that the surcharges collected from the customers may not exceed the amounts necessary to raise the Oregon share and therefore, in our view, divest the Oregon Public Utility Commission of discretion to authorize collection of greater amounts for the purpose of dam removal. Second, in light of this expressed limitation in the proposed legislation, we believe that if PacifiCorp or PUC in the future desire to collect more money for dam removal from customers than the approximately $180 million, the Oregon legislature at that time would have to repeal or amend Senate Bill 76 to allow that collection. It also lists the agreement in principle, the term specifying that the surcharge amounts collected from Oregon and California customers are the total customer contribution. And fourth, they believe that dam removal costs would have to exceed $450 million before there would be a need to seek further funding from any source. And as I already mentioned in my opening statement, there is an off-ramp in 2012 if it looks like those costs will be exceeded. You've also heard from my vice chair that this issue has been a contentious issue for decades. Colleagues, we have an opportunity where many, many people have come together. There's not 100% agreement, but 26 groups have been working for several years across divisive lines to craft something that many of us did not think were possible. You've heard there's been years of litigation and public relations battles. over the Klamath. We have in front of us, as been mentioned, a bill that strictly caps ratepayer liability. That's why I believe and came out of my committee overwhelmingly with a 4-1 vote that this bill makes sense for Oregon's ratepayers, and it makes sense in terms of the ultimate goal of restoring the Klamath Basin. So colleagues, with that, I respectfully request a call of the Senate, and I ask for your aye vote.
Senator Dinkfeller has demanded a call of the Senate. She is joined by Senator Devlin and Senator Bates. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the sergeant of arms will attend. The clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates.
You almost did.
Bonamici.
Here.
Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dinkfelder. Farioli. George. Girard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montez Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przanski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
Yes, he's here.
Star is who we're missing.
All members are present. The question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of Senate Bill 7-6. Those who opinion the bill shall pass and answer ayes, names are called. And those opposed, no. The clerk, please call the roll.
Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dinkfelder. Farioli. George. Girard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montez Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przanski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no. Boquist, Farioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Metzger, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters. 18 ayes.
Senate Bill 7-6, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 130, relating to dietitians.
Recognize Senator Jeff Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. President. Maybe we can lighten the mood a little bit. Colleagues, Senate Bill 130 authorizes the Board of Licensed Dietitians to prorate dietitian license fees. Colleagues, what that means is that they won't have to pay a full annual fee for a part year. This will probably be the only bill this session that could be described as a fee decrease. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Discussion of the measure. Question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 130. Those defending your bills will pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dinkfelder. Farioli. George. Girard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montez Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przanski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
The Senate Bill 130, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. I will head over without objection the remaining bills until the next calendar, which is Monday, February 13th. It's 23rd. Excuse me. I will carry over the remaining bills on the calendar to Monday's calendar, which is February 23rd. House, first reading of the House measures. Second reading of the House measures. The third reading of House measures. I've already set that over. Thank you. Other business of the Senate, in accordance with SR 8.4803, committee referral list number 838 and 39 and 40, were distributed to members February 16th. The referrals will be recorded in the journal and the status report. It is so ordered. All right, thank you. All right, we're now under announcement. Senator Ferriola, do you have an announcement? You're up.
President, Republicans will caucus immediately in the Republican caucus room. Please get your lunches and come immediately to the caucus room. We have a full agenda. Thank you, Mr. President.
Well, speaking of that, there is the taco lunch going on as we speak, so if you get a chance sometime while you're in caucus, go down there and show support for the Senate staff, which is working very hard to raise money for the governor's food drive. So that's today, right now, as we speak. The reminder, the YMCA youth legislature will be using the Senate chambers on Thursday and Friday afternoons and all day Saturday. For security, please clear the tops of your desks. The sergeant of arms will lock all chamber desks, so please attend to your desk. Put your flags in your desk, please, your flags. Also, on Thursday at 11 o'clock, up at the Senate lounge, we were going to have a conflict resolution.
Conflict of interest session.
You might please attend conflict of interest session Thursday in the Senate lounge, please. I thought you might find that helpful.
And we're going to come in at 10:30.
We are going to come in at 10:30 on Monday. Next Monday, we're coming in at 10:30 in the morning. Please remember also, well, even though many of you just left, starting on Monday, daily Senate floor sessions. Daily Senate floor sessions starting on Monday, and on Monday we will come in at 10:30. There's no further announcements, and without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 10:30 on Monday, February 23rd.